Get ready to laugh out loud with Wise and Nerdy, the show hosted by two hilarious dads who are bringing the unique blend of wit, wisdom, and nerdiness to the airwaves. From sharing hilarious anecdotes about their own experiences to giving advice on navigating the ups and downs of life, these two dads have got you covered. But that's not all. They're also obsessed with all things nerdy, from comic books and sci-fi movies to video and board games. So whether you're a fellow dad, a pop culture fanatic, or just in need of a good laugh, tune in to Wise and Nerdy and join in the fun.
Oh, and it's so much fun. This is Wise and Nerdy, where fatherhood meets fandom. This episode brought to you by the Smiling Homeschooler. Who knew that a podcast about homeschoolers could afford $1,000 an episode, much less not be so cheap to not want to pay it? But we appreciate you paying us $1,000 an episode all month of May. So go check out the Smiling Homeschooler when you can.
Not actually sponsored.
Wait, what? You told me Kelsey closed the deal. Joe, you said Kelsey went on a homeschool, the Smiling Homeschooler, had a great time, talked about Wise and Nerdy, and closed the deal for sponsorship.
Okay.
Hold on a second. So, Kurt, I'm glad you came tonight, because we need to talk about
Joe,
some professionalism, right? Some truth telling, if you will.
Yeah. Let me tell you about professionalism.
What is the question of the week? Did we get a question? We did not get a question of the week.
I can't believe you, Charles.
Write it in, Kurt.
Okay.
Tell us at the same time so we're not just...
Here, hold on.
It's the question of the week.
He didn't even say shut up, Mike.
He knows. I thought for sure he was going to be like, do you think Mike has a punchable face or something like that?
That is not an open general question that everybody can relate to.
Why not? I'd make a choice.
I'm sure that they would just insert someone in their life right in there. This is their Mike. He has a punchable face.
He's already started this. Let's get it. We're in it now. Kurt, different choices? What would you have chosen differently?
The way that I would choose panels for DragonCon would be solely and completely based on the money that I received from each of the panelists.
I need some clarification.
I totally forgot that idea. That's a brilliant. That is a super, there's nothing in the bylaws that says I can't do that.
So I'm
not above bribery.
Are you talking about how does Charles choose which panels get done on the track? Or are you saying like what panels you want to do, Kurt? Or are you saying what panels do I want to attend?
I think the question's pretty self-explanatory.
Nobody's actually read the question. How do you choose panels for Dragon God? This is the question.
You know, the thing about a well-written question is that it's open for interpretation. You may answer in whatever way you see fit.
Okay.
So to someone answer the question, I take out this dice that was gifted to me by Botched. That's probably the cheapest set of dice you could find on Wish. And I roll it, and if everybody gets
it, never stops higher, rolling.
Get on.
Yeah. Oh, that's how.
Yeah. So we had like 5,000 panels, and I rolled for 60 of them. And those who got 18s got in. Those who got 17 or less, they died.
Well, then.
But next year, 2025, we're going to Kurt this thing up. And, you know, $20 a panel. Do you want it?
The year of the Kurt. Yep. Now I need a Chinese calendar with the year of the Kurt.
It's a year of the Kurt.
So I'll throw this. So Joe, as a volunteer, we sit down at the beginning of the call. We set up the room before it officially starts. Then we have an orientation for volunteers. At that point in time, maybe a little bit beforehand, you guys are starting to pick panels that you're going to be in the room for, run the board for, all that stuff. How do you pick those panels for yourself?
So yeah, what Scott normally does is he sets up a Google Doc ahead of time, so that we can go in and sign up for which panels we want to volunteer on. And so what I immediately do is go through, look at the panels that I would like to be an audience member on. And I'm like, okay, volunteer, 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 volunteer. And so that's my first go through of our list of panels. That's how I choose which ones I'm going to volunteer on. And then when we actually get there and we're sitting down and we're going through them, I hop on several other panels that need a warm seat, a warm body in the seat. So
what about any panels off track that you go to?
A lot of times I try to keep
Hold on, Joe. Kurt, off track is anywhere that's not digital media. So I understand that while our world is our world, it's an amazing world in the Hilton basement. There are other places that some people who are not as dedicated as you or I go and see other things. That's off track. All right.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. It's okay, Kurt.
I look, and if it's in the West End, I say, nope, I'm not going to that. And so,
wait, so the convention is outside of our hotel?
No, yeah. No, it's not. Don't worry about it. It's not. Everybody just stays in other hotels. We all, yeah.
But, yeah, so I base it off of how much time I have in between panels that I am volunteering for and how far I can go. Generally, I don't go more than two hotels away. So that basically cuts out two out of the five hotels. But yeah, so I go through. DragonCon has a great app that you can look through the schedule and you can star different panels and it will create your own schedule. So instead of looking at the entire schedule, it'll only show the panels that you've starred. So then you can look at that schedule and you can go to those panels. Oftentimes I run into conflicts where I have two, sometimes three different panels on a time slot. And I'm like, well, I guess I got to choose one. And half the time, the one that I choose comes down to, do I really feel like walking to that hotel or is there one closer? And so I've been going to a lot more stuff in the Hilton, since that's where we're at, that normally I wouldn't have gone to, but I found quite interesting. Like I've talked about it on this show before, but this last year I went to one with you actually about poisons. And they talked about some historical facts with various poisons and poisons that became like medicines and things like that, depending on how you use them. And so, yeah, I just, whatever sounds interesting, I star it, and then I figure out the conflicts later.
Now, Kurt, for you, how do you decide what panels to submit or volunteer to be a panelist for?
Well, I'm a little weird in that I generally don't volunteer to be a panelist because it feels too self-serving for me.
Okay.
That's just the way I operate. So there's that. But the way, if I, like, this is the first year I've submitted a panel, really. And sure. So, and that's only because I'm kind of passionate about it. And that's really, I'm not going to submit a panel just for the sake of having a panel. You know, it just, that this doesn't sit well for me. There are panels that, I have volunteered in the past for a couple of panels because they're kind of in my wheelhouse from a passion standpoint. Like last year, too late, I submitted or I volunteered to be part of one of the mental health panels.
Yeah.
And I was just too late and maybe not the right fit. I have no idea. But then like, I was asked to be in a panel while we were at Dragon Con day of. And that was because that was for Sketching Shakespeare, which is not a panel this year for some reason. Okay. Even though the room was packed.
Roll the dice.
Yep.
Didn't come up 18.
And so Steph had said, hey, can you read this monologue from King Lear? Because that's what they were sketching. And I went, sure. And it was great. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Though so this year we'll see how it all shakes out. There were a couple of panels that I thought were going to be there and aren't, and a couple of panels that are going to be there that I know one of them, I guess I'm a member of. the moderator said, yeah. So
I thought you were talking about the Wise and Nerdy. I was like, we still haven't decided yet, Kurt. Don't push us online.
I'm sitting in on Those Were the Days.
Yeah, no, they listed you in the submission. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but like Shark Tank, I don't know if we're doing it. Like, I know it's on the list, but I don't know if I'm part of that this year. I was last year. There is no AI panel. But that's probably because nobody submitted one, I would think.
They didn't. And yeah. Everybody loves to argue against me, so I just didn't want to bother doing it myself. You know?
Whatever. Yeah.
It was a packed room last year. I mean, because it's a big topic in general right now. So
Kurt will never not be in his probationary period.
Right, right. if I'm not in a probationary period, I'm moving on to something else.
It resets every time he misses a show. We can't get 90 days.
Yep. It resets every time there's a Sunday. There's some notable things that are missing this year, but that is mostly because the people in charge of those panels didn't put them in.
I'll be honest. There's a long story about how I go through the process. I told it somewhat on bits of the connections with creators with Dragon Con channel. But I'll tell you in general, what made me happy about not seeing some of the staples was we have so many new and fresh faces. Bunch of people who came last year, maybe this is their first time. Well, I know like Jinxie Rose and Nick Lyle, it was their first times being professionals at the con. And both came in kind of late, so I was able to squeeze them on a panel here and there because I thought they looked cool. And so, I mean, your profile, and all the information was great, and they did great. And I'm like, man, y'all are so amazing to come back next year. Both individuals submitted at least two panels each, and they were so on point and on brand for both of them, and stuff that we need for the con. That is like done. And there's a lot of new names, a lot of new content this year, and that's like good. Because part of my fear is at some point just becoming the same old thing that I've seen everybody else do. It's like, oh, well, not picking on anybody here, but I'm going to use you in front of me. Well, I know Kurt can do this voiceover panel. So every year he'll have the voiceover panel, and he can do the weight loss panel, and he can do the, and Joe's going to do the geek dad panel, and he's going to do, and it's just, we just have that every year. So I knew there might come a time where, well, this year I did have, there was one or two staples that were decent. But in my process of how I look at things, I was like, it is good, but I'd like to give this person a shot. So I do spread it out. You know, if let's say Kurt, it was, and obviously it wasn't, you got your panel, but if it was you and you were submitting the panel and that's the only one you had, and I really, and I was like, well, okay, I do that. But when somebody submits three, that also helps me. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to pick out of your three. So you're going to get some things, but maybe we have to sacrifice. But yeah, just not... not having to make that choice very often was really good.
I think honestly, the only thing that I was weirded out about a little is that there were some were packed rooms and they're not there. And now, you know, like Pokedexpert, for example, they're not doing it. And I know that they said they weren't doing it this year.
So I wasn't sure on that one, to be honest, because we had talked here at the house about, look, actually at the con as well. It's like, man, we turned so many people away. We blocked it out. I said, my difficulty is that you can either have internet. In my world, you can either have internet or a big room. I can't do both. And right. Shannon got in that conversation. We all talked about it. Like, okay, you guys we'll take you to the gaming track. And I made some introductions. I assumed that they might just submit it to the gaming track because I literally talked to Jason about it and introduced them all, and when I last talked to Phil, he wasn't sure. But I told him, like, yeah, they did not submit it to me, but they weren't supposed to submit it to me because they could have both on the gaming track and it would work.
I think what I had heard was they didn't want to do it with Anthony being virtual again, because it isn't as good. It isn't as good if he's virtual like that. And so and Anthony couldn't come down, and so it was just they were taking the year off, as far as I know.
Okay.
So whatever. I literally put the question in because I don't know what it takes to program the panels, and I don't know what your thought process is. And if it's literally a roll of the dice,
nah, it's
I guess I could accept that. I might think a little less of you.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Oh.
I did make the cut.
We
cut you deep.
You know what? If we remember, let's bring it up after for Patreon while we do ours. Because I feel like for the question of the week, even for Tell Me a Story, I get really kind of deep in the process because it's not just a set easy peasy thing. I just feel like you'd drag it out. So while we get ready to roll the dice, we have some speak pipes from Cousin Mike. Let's see what old Cuzzy has.
Hey guys, it's Cousin Mike.
I like that Mike.
Yeah. Wrong Mike, Kurt. Wrong Mike.
Hey guys, it's Cousin Mike. I just got home from work. I was listening to the podcast, hashtag Patreon crew. And I just wanted to call in and congratulate Charles on starting My Hero Academia. It's a fantastic series. There are two movies, and you should totally watch them. They're both fantastic. But I would also like to recommend another little piece of My Hero Academia that you guys may not consider, but it's the manga for a side story called Vigilantes. So My Hero Academia Vigilantes. And it's fantastic because, sorry, I'm checking the mail while I'm doing this.
Go ahead. Take care of your life.
Follows kind of a different story, obviously, following Vigilantes. So people who are doing heroic things outside of the law. Anyways, the crawler is one of the best characters ever. Anyways, take care, everyone. Keep watching anime.
All right. Did you remember to put the flag down after you got your mail?
I didn't hear it complain.
Yeah.
But how fun would it be to have our own Wise and Nerdy postcards that we send out, and it would have lined up with him calling down about that? Holy crap! But I like the hashtag, but not hashtag Patreon crew, because anybody can use that. Hashtag Patreon poppies. PAPI. Pappy. Patreon pappies. Kurt's thinking about it. We got another one from Cousin Mike. What do you think about it? Papas? Patreon papas?
That's Grandpappy said Cousin he was ashamed to me.
I continued listening to the podcast, and Charles talked about wishing that the show would take place and the cast would slightly change and stuff. And that reminded me of a series that I think Charles should try watching. It's called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I've heard of it.
And every season, there's a different main character, and other characters intersect and combine, and it starts building out this universe. I think you would really enjoy it. It's very much anime. It's over the top, and it also has a lot of musical references. If you watch the English version, they take that out due to copyright, which is total BS. So always have the subtitles on so you know when those musical references are being made. And they're deep cuts. Like, they use Roundabout as the closing song
deep cuts
for the anime. So anyways, take care, everyone. Keep watching anime.
Thank you, Cousin Eddie.
Get a new phone. Not
Eddie. I always want to come Eddie. It's what Mike, Cousin Mike. I always want to come Cousin Eddie for Ed, and Eddie. I don't know why. But Cousin Mike.
I thought sure you were gonna make a vacation reference, Cousin Eddie.
Oh no. Yeah. That's a good reference too. All right, JoJo's Circus. Well, we'll check that out.
Bizarre Adventure. Yeah.
I said what same I thing. Said.
Roll that dice.
Shut up, Mike.
Which, by the way,
Daddy decide.
I decided to tell this story right now. By the way, I think we did the anime talk last week, so that means he's caught up. Maybe 2 weeks ago at most, but he's caught up on point and called in. Everybody else seems to be like Cousin Mike.
Oh, he's the guy.
Yeah, he's the one. He's the one. How do I, Joe? That one was yours.
It is. How do I teach my kids to be patient with their money?
Just don't give them any.
Right. So what spawned this is in the pre-show, Charles and I were talking briefly about Mario plus Rabbids 2 specifically. And it's a Ubisoft game. And anyone who pays attention to Ubisoft knows that give it 6 months, maybe a year, and those $60 games are going to be like $20.
Roll that dice.
Wrong button. Sorry.
Yes, you can roll the dice and just wait that many months and then you'll have a deal.
That was the button.
And but my kids, they had to have it for Christmas the year that it came out. Like it came out like a few weeks before Christmas or a month before Christmas. And so it made me think, like, if my kids would just be patient and wait, then they could save a ton of money, or we could save a ton of money. Or recently my son wanted a game called Boomerang Foo, which is a Switch game where you're food that have boomerangs and you chop each other in half. So you know, there's that. But if you look at Deku Deals, which is a website I use to check deals on Switch games all the time. That game goes on sale for like $2 or $3 every few months. And I told my son, I'm like, look, do you want to spend your money on this, or do you want to wait a few months and you will save $12, you know, 'cause it's normally 15. He's like, no, I want it right now. I'm like, okay. And so
is this one that we're speaking of?
11. It's my 11-year-old. And so how do you go about teaching them to be patient with their money?
Can I go?
Yeah.
Well, back in his day, TV was
back a nickel. Back in my day, so we traded rocks and we bartered for baseballs.
Gosh darn it, we like that.
So here's the problem. The problem is, how many of us have paid for video games for launch day?
Yeah, I've done that a few times.
Yeah. So I have a real, and granted, this is a specific thing. Like, I think your question's probably more generic, but the actual thing is a thing. But the video game, those are often sought at launch day because their friends got them, or you know, the zeitgeist of the whole thing happens more right around launch time, right? And so the excitement that you get or the excitement changes when it's already been out for 6 months. So I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just saying video games are a weird breed. But that being said, the big question is, does the kid have his own money to spend on this?
With the Boomerang Foo example, yes, that was his own money.
Okay. So I have a really hard time with that. I have a really hard time with that, in that saying, like, you can make the recommendation.
Like, I did.
But you kind of got to let them, if they've got their own money, you kind of got to let them learn, you know, because at some point they're going to go, oh man, I'd still have some money if I waited. But I think people kind of got to learn that whole thing. Now, there is another way. Like, let's just use the video game thing. You could say, look, if you wait and not get it right now, I will pay for half of it when the price drops, as even more of an incentive to wait.
So you get an even better deal?
Yeah. Now, it still may not matter, but you're trying to encourage them to do that, to wait. Because it doesn't sound like your kids have as much of a saving up money for the thing problem. You just want them to be more frugal.
Yeah. Well, and my wife put it in the chat here. We make them wait for 3 weeks. So they tell us that they're interested in buying something.
Right.
That way they don't impulse buy. And unless, now we do have some caveats. If there's like a limited time sale, it's a really good sale, then we have made it so they didn't have to wait the 3 weeks. But in general, we don't like them impulse buying stuff. And so that's what we make them do.
Right. So then the weird question is it actually an impulse buy if they buy it on launch day? Because they have, I don't know, maybe I'm making a presumption, but have they been doing what I would do, and that it would be obsess over it for a month before launch to get really hyped up on it and read as much as I can about the thing. And then when launch day hits, I'm ready. You know, maybe they're not like that. Maybe they are like that. So the impulsiveness of it is a little different. I think the idea of making them wait 3 weeks is a really good one for a different reason. Because when it comes out, it may stink. It may be a terrible game. Because we've all seen that show before where everybody's pumped for a game and it comes out, No Man's Sky, and it's terrible upon launch. And it only got good, 3 years after launch?
After they patched it a whole bunch?
Yeah. So I don't know. It's not easy. It's not easy, but I think the big win is they save up their own money. That's the big win.
Yeah.
Versus begging you to buy it for them and you caving.
Yeah. Well, and they earn money through reading books and doing chores. So, okay.
But still, yeah. There's value for value there, right? You are paying them and they're doing something to earn that.
Yeah. And they don't generally buy stuff on release in general, with the exception of the Rabbids one that I mentioned earlier. But yeah, it's usually, I went to a friend's house, I played this game, I must have it now type of thing is a lot of what it is. Or I saw an ad for this, I want it now. Now, we have gotten around some of that by downloading on the Switch specifically. A lot of times you can download a demo before they come out. So like the Princess Peach game that came out not too long back, we downloaded a demo. They played the demo. And they actually ended up watching their favorite YouTuber play through it as well. And then we haven't really heard anything about it since. So we ended up not buying that because, they seem to have lost interest.
So what you're saying is you don't actually have a problem.
No, I don't know.
No. I'm more giving you crap about it. I think that a lot of the problems that a lot of parents find are different than what your
face. Yeah, mine is rather mild. My kids are in general fairly patient, but that's because we've also established various rules that gatekeep how often they can buy games. So.
Great. Great.
And we've also told them under no circumstances will we ever buy them a cosmetic for a game. If they want to save their own money for it, that's one thing. But if they want a cosmetic, we will never buy that for them.
I was looking for something appropriate to create fireworks with. That is fantastic. Cosmetics are dumb.
Daddy.
They're just dumb. So...
Yeah.
But your problem, your thing that you're asking about is how do you teach them patience with money? And everybody's different, right? Every kid is different. So it doesn't necessarily mean that what I did worked. Well, will work for your kids. We started real early with all of them. And when we had the money, right, they were toddlers. Our rule was, and we didn't tell them this. It was just between my wife and I. We usually, if we went to a place like Toys R Us, that's where we'd go. Kids, there was this great place you could go and actually see a lot of toys and put your hands on them and do all kind of cool stuff. And you can't anymore. But we would have a $10 to $15 set aside budget in their head to say, okay, if they hold on to it through the entire store, we'll get it for them. And more times than not, they lose interest halfway through and we wouldn't buy it. Every once in a while, we'd buy one. Yes, it was way too expensive, but whatever. But every once in a while, we'd buy them one toy. So we started there. And then with their birthday money, depending on how much they got, sometimes we started young. We said, you have to put away this much into savings, period. And we told them what savings was. We were teaching them all that. And then we taught them about sales and looking at one point, the sales were always those yellow tags. They learned to really hunt those yellow tags because if they got the yellow tags, they could buy more toys. And we taught them how to budget, basically. And we made them do that. They put two or three or four things in the cart, and we do the math. So you got to pick one. And then they pick one. Now, that's not quite the pace that you're talking about where they have to have it right now. But as we just progress through all of that, partially, I made sure to give them their fix on some things. I'd have the games in my game. As a side note, Joe, I really think you should look into Gamefly. At the time that I left it, if it's still around, I think I had it pre-COVID. I don't know if they're still a thing anymore. But at the time I left, it was less than $20 a month, and we'd have two games out at a time. And it was so nice. And you could pre-order the rental of a new game like the Rabbids coming out. Right now, and so we come in a day or two, but you can keep it as long as you want. So that's a side note of if you want to help. That helped though, because I had games coming in, so it wasn't like, oh, my friend's like, okay, cool, I'll move it to the top of the list, it'll be here next week.
I would be worried, not if I owned Gamefly, I would be worried because there's within the past few months, or at least that's when I saw it, there's a new technique for cloning Switch cartridges.
Ah, okay.
And because of how the internals work, if two copies of a game are online at the same time, one of them won't work. And so I would be worried about people cloning their copies of games.
But back to finishing the patience thing, still to this day, not so much with the 17 and 19 year old, but definitely with the 11 and almost 13 year old, we don't let them spend all our birthday money. Cause they get about $100-$150 amongst the grandparents and us and whatever. And so we say, okay, again, but we'd already built that into them. Every time they get money, you're putting this much in the savings. And then at certain points in the year, they go, oh, how much do I have in my savings account? And we go, okay, you can take this much of it and spend it. You have this much, you know, portions of it. And that became a game for them as well. Like, oh, hey, I saw this game. Do I have the money saved up? And it just kind of helped. And honestly, there were just times when I was like, yeah, no. Don't care. No. Why not? Dad? My friends have it. Like, yeah, your friends have it, but you just bought a Nerf gun last month and you wanted to, and just no, you can't spend all your money. And I've just been real hardcore about that a little bit. And it seems to work out some. And I say it in that tone of voice because when Oakland got to be 16 and started making his own money and he would go buy gift cards for Xboxes, I would see game purchase. And I went, hey, buddy, why'd you just purchase all of the Elder Scrolls? You know those things are like 200 hours each. What? Oh, well, it was a deal. Like, was it, though? Was it a deal? So, yeah, it didn't always take. But I get – you pick and choose your battles, man, where you're going to do it and just say no. And honestly, that three-week thing, that is some patience, right? I mean, how did it work out with the Rabbids? Did he know it was coming out ahead of time, so he kind of cheated the three-week system because he couldn't buy it?
Well, so that one they asked for Christmas, so it wasn't them buying it.
Ah.
Santa
Claus knows when the sales are coming, and he might just forget to like, oh, look, this late Christmas present showed up in March. Man, Santa must have. I'm sorry, Flying Spaghetti Monster. I forget who the Mormon's like. Yeah, you see what I'm saying.
What?
I think he said something
like Spaghetti Monster.
Oh, I thought he said Mormons like Digimon.
I like Digimon.
You know what else we like?
Roll that dice.
Yes, sir. Shut up, Mike.
What are you nerding out about now?
Gamefly is still around?
Yeah.
Yeah. I recommend it, man. It's a good scratches.
That's what itch. Charles is nerding out about.
Not tonight. I nerded out about that about 2 years ago. But so I am nerding out about my daughter getting into gaming. But first, you rude butt faces. Not one of you said a single thing about my beautiful setup behind me in my studio. It's all clean. Cookie Monster's clear. I got my spirit animal right here on top of me. Got my lights set up. Got my original drum head up there. Over here that you can't see, I got other cool Demon Slayer stuff up on the wall. And not a single, Charles, is that a different light setup? Well, yeah, Joe, it is. Thanks for noticing. You didn't notice. I'm learning out about that. And what's also special about it leads into the other part is Zoe came out to help me. So we got all the Dragon Con stores put up. Some of the posters on the wall from Demon Slayer are hers, and she helped me design the wall. She had a lot of input and was doing all that with me. And it's like, hey, as we're talking to watch things, somehow it came out. I was like, oh, you might like the game Portal. And she just played. I only have Portal 2, but I said, it'll be fun enough. You'll try it. She started last Saturday, I think, is when we cleaned the barn out or cleaned this out, and then I got her to play through a few levels. She beat the game tonight. She's just been playing it and playing. The other night when Aaron and I went to the movies, apparently she played the whole time, which is about 4 or 5 hours, because she started before we left and whatever. Yeah, she loves it. So tonight we went through by the way, we'll get back to Epic, but Epic, there's some issue with the Epic launcher, but I don't know if you guys might advise me. But Epic, we got past that. We pulled up my Steam library. It's like, okay, here's this. And we'd look up a video if I didn't remember what the game was about, say, hey, do you want to play this? Got her a few games lined up that way. Then I went, I haven't logged into my Humble Bundle in forever. I've got so many codes. And dude, Joe, Kurt, for this show, you want to play a game night with people? I got all the You Don't Know Jack games, apparently. I've got all of the, what is it? The Jack TV, what am I trying to say?
Jackbox,
thank you. Jackbox TV. I have one through like six or seven of those. I'm like, where did all these come from? And so we loaded a few more games for her that way. And she's just really getting it. And while we're watching the videos, like here's a trailer. We don't know about the game. She's watching the, I'm not breaking up like that. Stop it, Kurt. While we're watching, don't distract me. You can still hear me. You can still hear me clearly, right? It's just the video. Stop
it. Random kid says, stuttering Stanley is back again.
So we got our bunch of games set up. She's excited. I had to kick her out because I was getting ready for the show. But come on, man. Look at this. Look at this. Spirit Animal Lodge right up. Nobody saying anything. Whatever.
I was wondering why you were playing Portal today.
Yeah. She's blasting it out. Okay, of course, she's on my account. That's what it was. We were watching the trailer of like a Mortician's Tale, and she's making some random comments. And like, do you even know what they're talking about? Because they're making a little bit. Zoe gets high-level humor. Right. But I thought, well, maybe some of the jokes they're making, she's not going to understand. She's like, oh, yeah, I know what they're saying. And then she made another comment. And I started listening. I was like, I looked at her and went, are you live streaming to nobody in your head right now? Because she was basically making YouTube commentary on the video and being funny about it. It's like, all right, I'll think about working with you in streaming and all this. But all right. That was my nerding out. Joe, what do you got?
I am nerding out about, surprise, surprise, said no one, about an anime called Summertime Render.
Better title than most that you bring.
A lot shorter.
That was definitely an American version.
Some versions are summertime rendering, but yeah. So there are a couple different ones depending on what source you look at. Anyway, super good.
Can we guess what the premise is?
Sure.
Maybe that should be the next game, right? Joe brings up an anime and we have to try to guess what it's about.
Kurt, what's your guess? What is your guess?
Okay. Summertime Render. So what this is about is about a group of friends playing in the summertime, and they have a contest to find out which of their fat renders first before school starts again. Didn't know I was going there, did you?
No, I did not. That was great. That joke brought to you by the Smiling Homeschooler. They have sponsored every bad dad joke by Kurt, which is why we can't do any bad dad jokes, because they didn't pay us a dime. So it's summertime. So obviously summertime. I think there's going to be a romance involved. It's going to be a coming of age story where a guy is trying to do this. He gets a crush on the girl. I'm trying to figure out the render part, though. That was a great joke you made. But I think somehow they get into a digital world and they have to create digital things in this digital world that they're trapped in. That's my take on summertime
render. Well, remember, I think one of the spells in World of Warcraft was rend, which is something that causes people to bleed.
Okay. Okay.
So this is all about summertime stabbings.
All right, John, what is it about?
So the main character is coming home for the first time in 2 years. And while he's on the boat to the island, he has this dream about his childhood friend / pseudo sister, because they grew up together, although they're not actually siblings. His parents died when he was younger and her family took him in. But the reason he's coming back to the island is because she died. He's coming back for her funeral. And so in this dream vision or whatever, she says, come find me. And then also says, protect their younger sister. And so it ends up being sci-fi thriller, sort of. So there's some timey-wimey-ness where he ends up in a time loop. And so every time he dies, he jumps back to the past. Does and yes, render? I did say
the word render.
Yes. He's
trying to prevent his fat from melting.
Well, so in the first episode, he finds out that it's suspected that his pseudo sister didn't actually drown because there were strangulation marks on her throat. And so he starts off trying to solve
her breathless. Is that what her
to solve her murder is what he's trying to do. But there's also like aliens and other stuff too.
Yeah, this title gives away nothing.
Where's the rendering happening?
What kind of render is it?
The render is his mind rendering reality when he goes back.
So I was the closest. Trapped in a digital world, they had to make things. He made reality. I'm taking it for the win.
It's. I actually think you guys would both like this, to be honest.
I don't know, man.
I don't think I described it very well, but I think you would like it.
I still haven't heard the answer. Is there barbecue?
Let's see. He makes curry. There might be some barbecue at some point, but I don't think so.
No fat rendering, Kurt.
No fat but rendering.
I mean, the aliens do consume people, so you know there is some fat rendering sort of ish.
How to cook.
That Kurt, why did you bring a Star Trek 1 reference in tonight?
There is a very good reason for that. And that is, do you remember what V'ger stood for in Star Trek 1?
Basically, yeah.
It was the Voyager spacecraft. The Voyager spacecraft, which is still in space. And the Voyager spacecraft, which left our solar system and continues to send back code 50 years after it was launched. And recently was sending back a bunch of crap. Oh, pardon my French. A bunch of not usable
mushrooms.
Mushrooms. Yeah, no, it was sending back a lot of code that was just gibberish, right?
Okay.
Here's the reason that I'm geeking out about it. The coders for the code for Voyager 1 said, oh, we know what this is. They're just sending back corrupt data. So we're going to patch it. and they updated the code on the satellite and it's sending back good information again.
How?
It took 2 days to upload the patch. And then they got verification. Yeah, I know. I would have thought it would have been longer too, but it 2 days to get the to upload the code, and it's now sending back better good data again.
That's crazy.
Way past its end of life. Like, and the people who know how to code in this archaic language now are older than the Voyager has been out there, like way, like a lot older.
Yo, because they coded it before it launched.
Yeah.
How many years has it been out there?
50.
Holy cow.
It's been in space for 50 years.
How does it say how far out it is, like in relation to planets?
It's past the solar system. It's out of the solar system. Yeah.
What kind of information are we getting?
Who knows?
Somebody has to know. How the heck are we not hacking that and getting that information on the web? For crying out loud. That's cool.
It says it reached interstellar space in 2012. You know, the big question is, will Voyager 1 ever stop? And it's expected to continue to return science data until at least next year with a maximum lifespan of 2030. But I have a feeling. Oh, and it says it may have enough electric power to return engineering data until 2036.
That's
incredible. I don't know. It's weird. It's really, really cool. And the only bummer is that it didn't have really high def cameras back then.
Yeah.
Because that would be awesome to get that kind of data. But
what year was Star Trek 1 set in? So we know.
Oh, that's right.
True. Yeah. But that was, wow.
Roll that dice. Stay tuned for this commercial break.
All right, boys, we're going to find a good song, and you're going to do this stuff right. So, Joe.
He's like, I'm out. I can't do this right. Bye.
Well, I guess I'll do it then. What's up, patron poppies? Papas? Hashtag patron papas. Patreon.com/wise_in_nerdy. And you can be a part of the fandom yourself over there. That'll get you to Discord. And we need to pick another movie night to watch with our patrons.
Yeah, we do.
And I just talked about all those Star game Trek codes. So, you know, we can do all kinds of stuff. So enjoy this music while we stare at half a Hulk. Yeah, where can they leave their voice messages?
You can head on over to wiseandnerdy.com/calldad to leave us a speak pipe, just like Cousin Mike did tonight.
How did you time it that well?
Shut up, Mike.
Holy cow. Seriously.
I am a professional.
It was almost like 1980s TV. Commercial break hit. Kurt took off to go do whatever he had to do. And before he could go, show's back on, he flew right back in. Oh, my God.
As if I have experience growing up in the 70s and 80s.
But that was a live commercial break. And he was literally just finishing the intro back in. You get that.
Yeah. Whatever. Roll that dice.
Waka waka, bad dad jokes.
I thought we said no bad dad jokes tonight because the show failed to pay the sponsorship that they promised.
What you got, Joe?
Oh, man. What did one toilet say to the other? You appear a bit flushed.
No.
So a couple weeks back, I went to the eye doctor here. And
did you though?
I did. I actually did. These are new glasses.
Ooh.
I had these last week, but not the week before that. Anyway, and so I got to thinking.
Oh, your prescription's off. That's why you couldn't see Nosuke sitting right above me looking beautiful. I got it now.
Sure. And so I got to thinking that if I was an optometrist, what would I name my eye care center? And so I did some searching, and I actually found this is a real eye center in Boise, Idaho, called OIC Eye Care.
Oh, see, I would have called it Idaho, EYE-DAHO.
You worked so hard, and you made yourself so happy with that joke.
That's not even a joke. That's a real eye care center in Idaho.
No, I get that. I get it, but it's still a joke.
But at you the laughed. Same
time. Okay, what is creative? This is creative. But you did. You were so hard, and the saving grace was it's real versus a bad punchline. Like Kurt had to add the bad punchline.
Oh, I actually have, it's not really a dad joke, but it's pretty funny. Hey Joe.
Yes, Kurt.
This week in X-Men, Wolverine.
I haven't watched it.
Stop. I haven't watched it either.
Well, but you weren't going to, okay, you know what? I'll save it because it actually only works if Charles has seen it. So never mind.
All right, I'll allow it.
You can fix that by going to OIC Eye Care. Then you can see it.
Roll that dice.
Mike told you.
Shut up, Mike. Daddy, tell me a story.
All right, Bobby. We'll get you a good old story. Bob McGee. I need one of y'all to be gone. He got to come on when I was gone. I want to be on when he's on.
Well, I'm not going to be on in a couple of weeks, so you can bring him on.
Well, you will line that up. You know what would be fun is if your granddaughter sat in for you when you were gone.
I would never.
I know you would never. That's why it'd be fun for us. Uncle Charlie and Uncle Joey's got some teachings to do.
It's not Uncle Joey I'm worried about.
it's that Charlie.
But, Kurt, wait till Daddy tells you a story, because you might be worried about Uncle Joey over here, because he fell asleep while operating heavy equipment. And I know it's not a dirty joke.
Accurate. yeah, so I was working as an early morning custodian during college. So that was working. My shift started at 4 a.m. And for the most of the time while I was working there, because I worked there for three and a half years, something like that, I was working on the floor crew. And so, you know, clean the floor, run the machine that you rode on to scrub the floors, scrub the tile. And I had tweaked my back, and I went to the doctor, and he prescribed me muscle relaxers. I didn't read the fine print that said do not operate heavy machinery. So I showed up to work like normal. I'm riding on the machinery. I fell asleep and ran into the wall. Luckily it didn't do any noticeable damage.
Oh no.
Is that because you didn't have your glasses on?
I didn't have glasses at that time. So I went to my supervisor. I'm like, look, I'm falling asleep. I can't be here. And so I turned it over to someone else and left. But that's not the only time I've fallen asleep operating heavy machinery.
Joe,
well, you left out the good news that the school got a new wing.
Well, and actually, one of the other people that worked there when he was doing that same machine ran into a pillar and put a huge dent, like a huge hole in the wall. So, you know, there was that. He was no longer allowed to drive the but floor cleaner.
You were, yeah, he was just tired. You were only on drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were tired. We did have someone with narcolepsy that I don't know why they let her work early morning custodian. That seemed like a bad call, but they did. And so basically whenever she didn't show up for work, it was just, okay, she's got narcolepsy. She's not here. But she wasn't allowed to use a step stool, let alone a ladder or operate any of the machinery or any, like there was a lot of stuff that she was not allowed to do because of her narcoleptic episodes, which makes sense. I was just a bit surprised that they would have her on the 4 a.m. shift. Then there was another time where I fell asleep while. What?
Statute of limitations, man. Tell us. Don't tell us how horrible you are. Yeah,
please tell us, because there's probably like three or four other things that you're not telling us.
I don't. As far as falling asleep while operating heavy machinery, I think this is the only two. But I have fallen asleep.
How many of those stories do you have, Kurt? Yeah, me either.
He's just shaking his head. I have fallen asleep while driving before. So that wasn't good. I was working the graveyard shift at a Burger King, and luckily no one else was on the road, and there were wide shoulders that had gravel, and so I woke up to the gravel vibrating my truck. But yeah.
Wow. How long do you think you were out when that was happening?
A couple minutes, maybe.
That's a long time.
it was middle of nowhere, Idaho, a very straight road with wide shoulder. Like it was as far as conditions for falling asleep, it was the best conditions. Not that it's no, bad to do.
I got you. Yeah. I mean, cause I think we've all had the falling asleep while we're driving thing. And you take steps to make sure you don't actually fall asleep, but you know, it's that whole, oh man, I can't even keep my eyes open type thing. Yeah. And long blinks, but not like, oh, hey, I'm going.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. My wife says it's such a scary story to hear afterwards. This was before we were married at all. This was, about 3 or 4 years.
Joe has to work from home.
Because can't. I'm a driving risk. I don't drive at night hardly ever anymore. Period.
It sucks. It stinks.
The world terrible. Thanks you. But my closest one is more of a non-memory. So I'd worked 48-hour shift on the truck as a paramedic. Got off shift. My wife now, who's my girlfriend then, lived where I worked, which is an hour away from where I lived. And I went and saw her for a little while and was tired, but, you know, dating, energetic, whatever. So when she got to go get ready for work, I got on the road. All I can clearly remember from that day, specifically, I told the story immediately to her later. I remember walking out her front door, a little blip of a section of road, like a blip, and walking in my door going, how did I get here? And I had no recollection of the 1 hour drive. Now, obviously, I didn't fall asleep, but my brain locked into none of it. And went, oh, crap. And I jumped in bed and went to sleep immediately.
I know what you're talking about. Autopilot. It's almost like a hallucination thing almost, right? I've been there. That is almost scarier.
Yeah, just completely zone out like you've lost time.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Clearly, you were abducted.
Yep.
Well, that would make me feel a little bit better than what I believe that I might have been a bit of a threat to society in that moment.
Most people don't think feeling better, you know, with being abducted.
Yeah, you're usually sorer.
There'd be a reason.
versus, and that's all I got to say about that.
Right. And that's the butt of that joke.
Wow.
I just want to make note that he said that. He said that.
That Charles is the butt of that joke.
All right, so yeah, we remembered it. Council of Dads, Council of Dads. I'm glad you're here tonight, Kurt, because you've got good opinions on tech and frustrations. Here's my question: we got some decent browsers out there, right? Mozilla, Google. Some say the Edge is decent. I don't know, but you got some decent browsers out there. But why does some software hate certain browsers, and sometimes only on certain devices?
Joe, you want to go first?
Sure. It's because they're coded differently. They interpret HTML differently. It's just how it works. Although nowadays, most browsers are a branch of Chromium, which is sure. what runs Chrome. And so most browsers will interpret things relatively the same, but there are still nuances. But yeah, up until a couple years ago, at my work, we had to make sure all of our web interfaces worked with Internet Explorer, because we were still using Internet Explorer.
But how come there were different sites that said you could only use Internet Explorer?
Oh,
it was so, drives me crazy.
But because they're coded very, okay, very okay, differently.
But what about from device to device? Because I can use Mozilla on my PC and I can get to a site, but then I open it up on my phone, my Android phone, Mozilla may or may not go to the site. And I open up Mozilla on my iPhone, it may or may not go to the site, and it's still Mozilla.
And then there's different compatibility modes that stuff run in, and so you've got, even though it's Mozilla,
asking a question because it's just making me more angry.
Yeah. So even though it's Mozilla desktop versus Mozilla mobile, which again are coded differently.
The easy answer is think Mac versus PC.
Yep.
If you code a program for the PC, it is not going to work on a Mac just natively. It has to be programmed specifically for the Mac. So same thing with the browsers. Well, a little different, but go with me on this because it's the closest analogy that we've got. Having Mozilla on the phone. Yeah, I'm looking at a mirror. Mozilla on the phone versus Mozilla on the PC. Uh-huh. It may as well be called a different product. While it may maintain some of the same core code, how it works with the device is way different. Yep. And it is very much Mac versus PC type of thing. It's a compatibility thing. And I was going to be way more harsh than Joe. And I was going to say it's because the developers aren't very good, because literally part of the reason why we have standards like HTML5 is to be able to code web pages so they work uniformly across devices.
Right.
However,
there are sections of code that I have written that says, okay, if they are using Internet Explorer, do this. If they are using anything else, generally anything else, do this instead, because that's how it needs to interpret it, so that it can at least if not look the same, at least function almost the same.
And then it gets a little weirder too, because like I think what a lot of times happens for web apps is they use the core. Let's use HTML5 just as the example. They use the core HTML5 to code the web page, and that's great. But now they have some performance problems because the browser might be slower or whatever. So they veer off of that code base to make it more efficient to run in that browser. And once they do that, then they've branched off, and now it may not be better on a different browser, on a different computer or whatever. It's just, there's a lot of complexity to it. And we've gotten actually spoiled by web apps. We have expectations because web apps have gotten so good. I mean, literally, Joe remembers this, I'm sure. But back in the day, saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have our applications all like run in web pages. Stop it. Stop it. We're going to have separate applications for the computers and the whatever. But having them actually be apps that run in a browser, that's kind of a new thing. And granted, it's what, 15 years old, maybe ish.
And so many companies are using antiquated stuff simply for cost measures. They don't want to update. When I first started working at Blue Cross, what is it now? 13 years ago now, 12 years ago, something like that. I had a Windows XP machine. And then we jumped from Windows XP to Windows 7. And now we're on Windows 10, but
which is going end of life.
Yeah. Basically, they ride everything until end of life, until they're forced to upgrade. And even then, companies like Microsoft make bank off of offering contracts to extend end of life. So we paid for extra support for Windows XP for years so they didn't have to update our machines, basically.
If it wasn't for Microsoft saying Internet Explorer is going end of life and we're not going to use it anymore or include it in the operating system, banks would still be requiring Internet Explorer.
Yeah. There's still government systems that run off of floppy disks.
Yes.
That's so true. Like it's
well, you know, in a real world story that is a little crazy, Hugh, who we've referenced already earlier tonight, his dad, I can't remember if his grandfather started the company or if it was his dad, but basically his dad ran Morrison Thread Company and wrote an accounting program that, and this is, they started on Windows 95, got to Windows 98, and then it wouldn't run on XP. So they had, when I met him and we were at the end of life of XP, he still had that him and his brother now run Windows 98 computer just for that. And it was starting to die. And so I told him about, hey, you can always get an XP computer and run an emulator, or you can put the drive in there. So he did that for a while. And finally, like within the last 3 years, this is 2024 as of this recording. So since COVID, he was having some more problems with it. I'm like, Hugh, seriously, tell me what this program does. And he was describing it. I'm like, dude, there's so many programs out there that do exactly that. And he's like, really? And he looked into it because they had just been nursing old tech along for decades because his dad hand-coded this thing and it just worked a certain way. And I think they ended up going with QuickBooks. <It's> like, I'm telling you, man, there's so many out there.
Well, and because of situations like that, there are specialist companies that make Windows XP or Windows 98, you know, old operating system with new hardware. That's what they do, and they make bank on that. They because they know that you can't find this hardly anywhere, so they can charge basically whatever they want. And businesses in general get upcharged way more than normal customers, normal consumers would.
We do outsourced IT, and one of the companies that we support does chemical testing. And have been in business for a very long time. They're running machines that are still running on Windows 2000 because the hardware to interface with the testing machines doesn't work with newer computers. And to upgrade the whole kit and caboodle, $70,000.
I know that's kind of a big number, but that's not a huge number.
It depends on what their monthly income is.
It depends on the scale of the business.
For
something like Blue Cross Blue Shield, $70,000 is relatively a drop in the bucket.
Right.
But for small mom and pop,
but not out of
range.
Right. Yeah, well, and right, then though. Cash flow and everything. So, and you know, I don't know, but my guess is that at some point we may have to drop them as clients because we can't support that old stuff.
Yeah.
And because we can't keep them safe, because that's the other part, security. Yeah. is a big deal. That all those security holes in the old operating systems are forever and always open now
because they're not getting updates, and they haven't for decades.
Right.
I mean, even just think, we started this conversation with web browsers. Think about back when every web browser used Flash a ton.
Yes.
But it had so many issues with it running code just without any security checks. And so it got completely retired instead of patched. I mean,
back it when... It stuck around longer than it should have, too.
Oh, it really did. I mean, you would... As a teenager, it was, okay, let's go to this website and play, have this huge list of games that ran using Flash. I mean, my kids, they're playing Bloons nowadays. Bloons back in the day was a web-based Flash game. And so they have, you know, graduated well beyond that because Flash hasn't been used in I don't know, what, a decade or two at this point. So, yeah. Yeah,
it's an interesting ride. So before we get out of here, I want to say go listen to the Smiling Homeschooler superstar Kelsey Ard on it. Thanks for name dropping us. Yeah, we're available for interviews. $1,000 a pop.
Just make sure you don't fork your code too much. And that's the show.
Follow these nerdy dads on social media. Charles at Rock God of Podcasting. Joe at Joseph_Ard. Check out the website, wiseandnerdy.com. And as always, they may not be your father, but they'll always be your daddy.
And VO by Kurt at VO by Kurt everywhere. Shut up, Mike.
And then...
No, and then.
And then.
No, and then.
No, and then.